The Loose Cannons Podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. I was worried going into the recording of this one that Patrick was going to make the joke about this being a spooky podcast, and then I realized that this podcast is probably going to be released like in January of next year, because we recorded like 10 podcasts between, yeah.
All the Halloween months, yeah.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
2014 sure ended crazy.
Yeah. It's so weird how the whole world was destroyed.
God, yeah. Didn't see that coming. Back
Thank
around
God there's still
Halloween.
A podcast, though.
Yeah.
As
we're
we
still
roam
doing,
the wilderness.
Doing our part.
iTunes still going
yeah,
strong.
We still have our old
even
podcast
in the post-apocalypse.
To keep us entertained.
These will be the stories we tell our children in the future. One time I watched a movie.
Speaking of post-apocalyptic wastelands, we watched a movie called The Docks of New York. Those two things are not connected at all.
Excellent segue.
This was Patrick's pick. Oh, it's from 1928, directed by Joseph von Sturmer. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Talk,
I keep forgetting about
the
segment.
Movies. Yeah.
Who wants to talk about some movies that they've seen?
Patrick?
I will talk about a movie that I saw. I guess I did have a strong reaction to it because I got into an argument with somebody about it right
nice.
Afterwards. And that was the movie Birdman, which I did not like and which they thought was brilliant.
I think it's
and,
pronounced Birdman. Like
Birdman?
Joseph Birdman.
Harvey Birdman?
Yeah.
I gave it 2 stars on Letterboxd and my friend thought it was brilliant and we got into an argument about it and I compared it to Ratatouille because it's basically about the same thing where it's about an artist, you know, like confronting criticism of his work and kind of like art and mass production of art and all that stuff. And my friend was just like flummoxed that I would compare this movie to an animated children's movie. And I was like, are you not listening? They're about the same things. That's why I'm comparing them. And I think Ratatouille does everything that this movie does way better. And from there, it just got kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't call it ugly necessarily, but some feelings were hurt.
And you're not friends anymore?
No, we're still friends. There was just a, you know, an exchange of words.
Nice. I almost saw Birdman, so I could have chimed in, but the preview screening was really packed, and there were about 15 people in line in front of me when they turned everyone away and said, we are at capacity. So,
I will say, something I didn't know right before I saw it was that it was like a really long take movie. There's a bunch of like strung together.
I found that out recently.
And
I wish I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought that structured detracted from the movie quite a bit. Like I thought it detracted from what the story I was trying to tell quite a bit.
When I heard that, it made me way less excited to see it. Yeah,
yeah, that it put a damper on it for me too a little bit right before I saw it. I was like, oh no, it's one of these movies. And then I was like, Inuyo 2 is just trying to, you know, bite Quran's style, isn't he? Because he took his DP and now he's trying to do the long take thing. And I was just like, this is kind of, you know, not as good. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess it made sense in Gravity because it was this long ordeal. But in this movie, it's like all these interconnected scenes, but a lot of times you're just watching someone walk from one place to the other. And you're just like, why am I watching this person walk over here? You could have just had cuts in this movie and not have all this walking.
Just like Friday the 13th.
Yeah. And La Ventura.
And Stalker. And most of Tarkovsky's movies actually are about people walking. Walking around.
I didn't think that the way this one was shot is nearly as beautiful as most of Tarkovsky's stuff, though.
That's probably a very good point, yeah.
A lot of it was watching two people's faces this close to each other because they had to block out all the other stuff that they were doing back here. I was just like, this is distracting.
Yeah.
Tarkovsky needs more Ed Norton in his underwear, if you ask me.
That was my one complaint about
it. What's always missing.
Ed Norton gets his full kit off in this one. He's like totally naked.
Yeah.
Nice.
Do you think sculpting...
Excitement level backup.
Do you think Sculpting in Time had like a chapter about Tarkovsky dreaming up Edward Norton in his underwear, being like, if only that guy had been born earlier.
Or if he had lived longer.
Yep.
That's true. Tarkovsky wasn't that old when he died, was he?
He's like 50-something, I think, right? Like pretty early.
Yeah. Yep, if he was Alan Rene or whatever, that marriage could have happened. Living to 90 or however old Rene was.
Right. Pretty old. Or Raul Ruiz, or Manuel Oliveira. Some directors just get really old.
He's like 105.
Yeah.
It's out of my mind.
Still going strong.
Yeah, the story that I heard blows my mind every time, where like he got taken into a hospital for some like heart issue or something. And as soon as they would let him, he's like, I'm checking myself out. I have a movie to make.
That's pretty
badass.
I don't
have time to sit around in a hospital.
who else
watched?
I have one too, but it doesn't matter. What order are we going, I guess?
Yeah. I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre last night. The new like 4K restoration that's going around, and that movie's pretty cool. It's pretty horrifying still. I hadn't seen it in a really long time, and it's pretty scuzzy. I won't say too much about it though, because I think I might write a review of it for the Loose Cannons website. But
nice.
It didn't all work for me, but the parts that did work worked really, really well, and made me feel legitimately weird going to sleep afterwards, which doesn't happen very often with movies.
So none of the like what we, because I had not seen it, I had not watched it in a very long time. When we did the Friday the 13th podcast, I kind of mentioned that I think like some of it bugged me, or like my memory of it, like certain parts of it were like about like caricatures of like country, like southern people or whatever. Was that
I think there's some of that going on, but I think there's actually, I don't know, I might be reading too much into it, but I think there's a pretty interesting subtext that I'll get at that. I feel like based on the way the movie is made and the points that it makes is intentional and is pretty interesting, but
Guess I'll have to wait for the write-up
review. Yeah,
cool. Okay,
I actually
didn't watch anything, so you can skip me this time. rhythm.
Okay. Well, I've seen a couple movies recently, but the only one that I felt really, really strongly of was Gone Girl, which I hated a lot.
Nice.
It's going to be one of the worst movies that I see this year, for sure. In pretty much every aspect, I don't recommend this movie. I thought the way that it looked never really had anything to do with what was going on in the movie. The sound was really uncomfortable and not in like a good way, not like Rosemary's Baby, just like didn't seem good. Like everyone sounded like weird or distant or something, like all of the time for like no reason. The dialogue felt like a first draft of like a college play or something. A lot of the time nobody sounded human. Everyone, like, it was kind of like a quirky romantic comedy, except for not a romantic comedy, but everyone like was supposed to be defined by these like weird like things that like, but they didn't have any character otherwise. Like the movie starts off with Ben Affleck's character carrying a board game to visit his sister at a bar. But it doesn't mean anything. It's not brought back. There's no explanation for why board games is their thing or why he brings her one. She just, like, puts it behind the bar. It's just, like, a hat tip or whatever to the idea of characterization without actually having any characterization. And all that's ignoring the fact that the movie is deeply, deeply misogynistic. Like, maybe one of the most misogynistic films I've ever seen in my life. Some people argue that it's about, like, women responding to the patriarchy. But if that's the case, like, you have to give the women more than, like, 15 seconds of screen time. You can't give the, like, man responding to what's going on, like, 2 hours. And expect the audience not to sympathize with him. I don't know. I deeply hated this movie, and I couldn't believe how long it was. And every time I was like, how much longer is this movie going to go on that I've hated from pretty much the first 15 to 20 minutes in it? So.
I'm going to have to.
2.5 hours long.
I'm going to have to see this now. Like. I'm genuinely intrigued.
You should all see it.
I'm genuinely intrigued to see how bad it is. Wow.
I saw it and I did not hate it nearly as much as Ruben did, although I would agree that it's a bad movie.
I had a chance to see it and I didn't, because actually I was like, I don't think I'm going to have a strong opinion on this movie. Apparently that actually might happen.
It's true.
So I was like, who cares about another David Fincher hack for hire movie, as Basil aptly called him one time.
I find it funny that I get genuinely excited about bad movies as much as I get excited about good movies now. I'm like, a really bad movie.
You have a response to it, so that's something.
Yeah.
Also, the answer is America, Ilya. America loves this movie,
yeah.
Which is really...
Yes, America has
given
it. Well,
I think
one of the things that I find...
I saw it being discussed
sort of,
like everywhere, which kind of like just really surprised me, because it felt like, okay, I mean, I guess it's like this, because it's so like middle of the road in like the way, so it's got like a sort of cool director in Fincher, who like everyone kind of agrees on, as in like he's a competent director that people like, and Ben Affleck, who's like also like the totally nothing special dude, but like who also makes like, I don't know, like acclaimed movies, whatever that means, and like, yeah, let's put him together and like give him like a weird story that is also not really that edgy at all.
Yeah,
but that'll like get middle America talking about this.
I think the reason that so many people have gone to see this far is because it's a best-selling book. Because I think the book was really popular, and then they were like, oh, we gotta make this book. We gotta cash in on this, you know, the popularity of this book.
It is edgy, but in a really gross conservative way. So it's going to really challenge your preconceptions of liking women. And thinking that they're human beings.
When I first heard the title of this movie, I thought it was a sequel to Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
The origins of this movie are so gross. Like, or I guess the story, which is that basically the author thought it would be an interesting thought exercise to imagine the Scott Peterson case where she ran away instead of he murdered his wife. And he was like, what would happen if it was like that? And that's, we've already talked about this kind of on the what's the Black Book podcast, but I find that kind of thought experiment to be disgusting.
That does sound pretty gross.
Like, those are real people's lives, and she was totally murdered by her husband.
Yeah. And
but what if, Ruben?
Can I play devil's advocate?
That's my favorite thing in the world. Do you know what he's talking about? It's a comic for a superhero called the Not All Men Man.
not every man. That's what.
Yeah, yeah. And he like gets a signal that someone is speaking ill of men somewhere. And there are two women having a conversation about like she's, and one of them's like, it really annoys me when men, and then he like dives backwards through the window onto the table and he's like, can I play devil's advocate?
I'm posting a link to this in the chat so you guys can see it.
I have seen this actually. Now that you
it's that not sounds, all men
that sounds That's really funny
is. Not all men.
Voice of the voiceful.
His outfit is pretty amazing too.
I love that he has eye holes cut in his hat.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, right. Visual jokes for the podcast.
So, yes, everyone will enjoy that at home.
They've probably all seen it, but if not, look it up.
Well, we'll post a link. We can post a link under the in the timeline or whatever.
Okay,
it's true.
Yeah, no problem. We will, maybe if we remember to.
By then, if this really is released in January, no one is gonna give a shit about Gone Girl anyway.
Yeah, they probably will. It's probably gonna get some Oscar nominations.
It's gonna get like Oscar buzz maybe or whatever. Yeah. That would be hilarious. Okay. Right on.
I mean, the two cops in it, I actually like their performances a lot. Patrick Fugit from Almost Famous, and what's the woman's name, Basil?
Which woman?
The cop.
Oh, Kim Dickens?
Yeah, Kim Dickens, because you were mentioning
Kim Dickens is great.
Well. Yeah, Kim Dickens and Patrick Fugit are really good in it, I thought. But everything else about the movie I hated.
Tyler Perry will get a Best Supporting Actor nomination.
Nice.
That he doesn't deserve.
Yeah. People are going crazy for his performance,
he's
though.
Like, he's not bad, but I feel like they're just being like, oh, he's normally so bad that the fact that he's just okay in this movie is, like, award-worthy. Right.
I forgot that he was a theatrically trained actor with lots of experience. Capable of a regular performance.
It's, like, when people are talking about Colin Powell running for president, and everyone's compliment was like, he's so well-spoken. And I'm like, he's also an extremely experienced politician. And like,
yeah.
Was like a general.
I was going to say he's a general in the army. Like, yeah.
But he's so well-spoken. Thank you.
Yeah. That's pretty disgusting.
All right, so
we ready to discuss
talk about
the Docks of New York.
Oh yeah.
This time I can segue. Speaking of sexist films, Patrick, give us a little plot description.
Okay, the Docks of New York is about a stoker for a ship whose name is Bill Roberts, and he gets one night of shore leave and goes into a bar and He goes into a bar first, then he like has a little stroll down by the docks and sees a woman who's jumped into the water, jumps in and saves her, and sort of helps one of the other ladies at the bar like nurse her back to health and gets her clean clothes and everything, and then decides after having a conversation with her that he wants to marry her. So they have like a big wedding and they get married, and then he's like, oh, I'm gonna go back out to sea and I'm gonna have to leave you, sorry, it was just one night or whatever. And then he decides as he's back out on the ship in the ocean to jump in the water and swim back to New York and to save her from having to go to prison for stealing the clothes that he stole, actually. And that's basically the plot of the movie.
Just one thing. This part was confusing to me as well, so it makes sense that you messed it up. But his boss is the one who's in the bar. So his boss is in the bar and sees his wife there. And then he gets off the ship. He doesn't go to the bar and then go for a stroll. I was confused by that too, because they were like, all right, we're going to have a night off. And then it cuts to inside of the bar and people are dancing, but they're not there yet. And then it cuts back and it's like night and fog, the sailors disembarked from the boat. And I was like, wait, what? I thought they already did that.
Yeah, I thought they were really already in the bar. It was a really
confusing structure for that part. But
the structure, that was a little confusing.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you got everything, right? Anyways, Basil.
I thought this movie was okay. I really wanted to like it because there are parts that are super, super beautiful, and I was like, wow, Joseph von Sternberg, he really knows how to use the camera. It looks real great. And it was also pretty quickly paced, and I sort of liked the structure of it all kind of taking place over one 24-hour period. I was like, that's kind of cool. That's neat for like a pretty early film to have such a condensed timeline. And then I don't know, I still couldn't really like fully embrace it because it's got some shitty parts. Some shitty parts relating to the characters, but so that's basically how I felt.
Would you say it's the silent film version of Nick of Time?
I'll say
it's pretty close.
I think there's a part where he refers to the woman as a trim sail or something like that.
I wish I'd written that down. It was something like...
I did write that down.
But we can get to that later, I guess.
Yep.
But yeah. I was really in love with a lot of things about this movie, just because a lot of them reminded me of the reasons why I loved Blondina so much. It was... like how really good von Sternberg is with black and white cinematography. It's really impressive. Like every single one of pretty much every single frame could just be like a painting or whatever. It's so ridiculously good looking this whole time, and almost effortless in that way. I kind of enjoyed just like the ridiculousness of a lot of this movie's aspects, like just how the main guy solved pretty much all his problems by shoving and punching people whenever he felt in any way like that someone was getting in his way, which I felt was just like, yeah, that's pretty convenient.
He even hanged somebody over a balcony at one point.
And then at the same time, I felt like, and we can get into this later, but I feel like the movie is really good. Like, in this movie was really good at, like, getting, like, small moments into, or, like, moments of, like, more earnestness or whatever in amongst all the ridiculous things that are going on, such as, like, some stuff involving the preacher and, like, some stuff involving May and, like, which I felt worked all the better for it. But yeah, unfortunately, like there's a lot of things that happen in this movie where it's just hard to watch without shaking your head. But yeah, and that is the thing that also makes me kind of like stop and not want to give it too big of a rating, but I really enjoyed the parts that I enjoyed, that I liked. So yeah, I guess I'll say I like it. Yeah.
I'm in the same camp as you, Ilya.
Next.
I thought. Oh, I'm right, next. Right. Sorry. I forgot. This was my.
No!
You go.
Go, Ruben. You go.
You're going to lose our entire audience, Patrick, by breaking the formula.
I'm sorry.
You're like, what is going on? What is
I'm
going
sorry
on?
To all five of you.
I listen to this podcast for structure. I want structure in my loose cannons.
I'm going to turn this off right now.
This cannon is too loose.
I think I've skipped other people like 3 times or tried to skip them. I'm joking.
It's probable.
I'm basically where you guys are. This movie is super beautiful, but it's also really uncomfortable to watch for a lot of reasons. I feel like it was so beautiful, like one of my favorite films to look at, that it ended up being enough that I liked it. But man, if it had just had like a tolerable story, it'd be like one of my favorite movies of all time. But it was really pushing back. I like how like right at the beginning, there's like a intertitle that's like it's like this film takes place back when coal work was man's work or whatever, when you had to like the sweat off your brow, like shoveling coal before, you know, like ladies or whatever, something, something. And I was like, what is going on already in this movie?
It took like all of 2 minutes before they got there.
When men were men and women were something. Property.
Yeah. Something, literally.
So, I mean, I assume that's mostly what we're going to talk about as we get into it, but I think I liked it probably more than Basil, but I didn't like it a lot.
Patrick? I'm right there with Ilya. I thought it's a very beautiful film to look at, and I also enjoyed that scene that he was talking about with the preacher. I think the preacher might have been my favorite character in the movie, because he's the only one who's just like, this is all some bullshit. Like, basically. Well, then he's just like scowling and just like, ugh, you people are the worst.
What was his name? Him Harry? Something?
Him Book Harry.
Him Book Harry, yeah. Probably where to begin with the sexism in the movie, but
right at the beginning,
it's just right up front with it, you know.
I think it kind of answers our question about Blonde Venus.
At least they're not trying to hide it. No, but I do think it's a very well shot film, and I think it almost has that feel of like that kind of pitter-patter dialogue, even though it's a silent film. Like the way that the intertitles are written, they kind of flow together very well. They're not just like, hey, you over there. It's more like they have a sense of diction to them. Like they have a sense, you can kind of get a sense of the way these characters talk from them. And so in that aspect, I thought that they were well written, even though that they're content is not up to snuff. I thought that they were better written titles in terms of actually giving me a sense of how these characters sounded in their voice than other titles that I've seen in silent movies. And I guess that's due to the fact this was like late in the silent era.
Yeah, last year.
Yeah. I was gonna say I agree about the titles, although there was a moment in it, or at least like an overall feeling eventually, that it was sort of like exoticizing poorness. Like, look at how colloquial these people talk with their, you know, fancy weird slang, and they're dropping letters off the end of phrases. But
that's true, especially considering von Sternberg put the von into his name to sound more aristocratic, so if anyone knows anything about pretending to be someone.
Who's that director?
Like acting like they're
who
cool.
did a movie about Che, and like, I think he did On the Road as well. The Motorcycle Diaries.
I think it's like Soderbergh made Che.
Who's not that Che? Not that movie about Che.
The Motorcycle Diaries?
Yeah, definitely the Motorcycle Diaries. The guy who's like one of the 10 richest people in the world, but only makes movies about poverty.
Oh, right. Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. Right. That's really gross.
Joseph von Sternberg is like the classic version of him. He's the OG, and that guy's the, the remix.
Right.
Remix.
I mean, well, von Sternberg is really not interested in, like, examining the roots of, like, the problems in this, like, in the society that this movie is dealing with. Like, not in the least. He's really just more about showing how fun, or, like, how not even, like, in a way, that bar scene, like, it. I really liked it so much, but I kind of liked it because it was so obviously not true to like what it probably was like at the time. Like I mean this movie was made like during the basically during the Depression, right? So this was like in like a,
no it's
in,
before the Depression
it was yeah, 1 year before the Depression.
Yeah
But was it during the Prohibition then? Probably.
I can't remember what year. Probably.
Because so it kind of felt like this was like he was trying to make it out, trying to show like a bar that didn't even exist anymore and like show how cool it was and like just make it as like exaggerated as possible. Mm-hmm.
To 1933.
Right. So it was like right in the middle of it. So yeah, I don't know. Like when I was watching it, I made a note, like, von Sternberg films bars that, like, I would want to be in. Like, it was made in such an exciting way in the way he films crowds. Like, I think I remember reading, either it was James Harvey or someone saying that, like, Preston Sturges had, like, this innate talent to film crowds or, like, lots of people. And, like, very few directors really could do that. And I feel like von Sternberg is, like, a really big talent to, like, put so many people into a frame and make them all look like they're doing something and like they're there for a reason. So people in the background when they're dancing and when they're talking to each other look more alive than like some people when they're like in close up in front of the camera, you know. Mm-hmm. Like that was something I really enjoyed in those scenes. And a lot of it is like it's so aestheticized too. Like the moment when this Bill's boss goes into the bar for the first time, it starts with a guy getting thrown out of the bar for fighting and ends with a guy getting thrown out of a bar for fighting. While it's like, it's got this like elliptical feel to it. And I feel like a lot of it was just like, yeah, I just, you know, let's just go crazy and film like the craziest bar ever.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and they're like, oh, I was gonna say they're like mirroring tracking shots. Like the first one's a tracking shot into the bar and some guy's getting thrown out, and then the next one's like tracking shot out of the bar. That's almost the exact same shot.
Yeah,
I also liked the crowd scene when they're doing the actual wedding, with mm-hmm. with all the people just sort of like lined up behind them in the bar, like just this big crowd of people like celebrating. I thought that was a very well done shot, and there. There's another shot in there.
Well, can we talk about that for a little bit before you move on?
What, the wedding?
Yeah, if we're going to talk about it.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah, let's talk about the wedding.
I thought that was interesting because, like, a lot of the rest of the movie seems more lighthearted, I guess, than that moment. Like, even, like, up until the moment when they're wed, everyone's sort of being, like, goofy and blasé about it. And then there's, like, this moment when, like, the priest says the, I guess, vows or whatever. And, like, what's his name? Roberts?
Bill Roberts.
Bill Roberts, where he gives, like, a surprisingly vulnerable look at the priest. Yeah. it seemed like the moment that was like the most important part of the film. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, the attitude of the whole crowd changes too. They're like, they go from joking around and being like, yeah, I object to this wedding, to like being really solemn and like, oh wow, this is pretty great to be here. And like, even the music sort of changes and becomes kind of romantic, and I was like, whoa, why is this wedding scene between a guy that I don't care about and a woman that I do kind of care about? Like, why is this scene working on me? And I thought that was pretty cool that he could sort of drop the act that quickly. And
yeah, I think a lot of it is because of the priest, because of him Book Harry. Maybe it's a Kuleshov effect a little bit, because we see him looking very stern, and then we see it, you know, we cut back to them, you know, saying whatever they say, and then we cut back to him looking very stern and serious. And part of it's that, part of it's also because probably all the emotion that was going on in those earlier shots dies down behind them, and people kind of, you know, aren't like flailing their arms around or whatever they were doing in the shots before that.
Well, it starts also because with him not wanting to do it, because he looks at them and is like, do you even know what you're doing? Do you even have like a license or anything? Like, is there any point to this?
Names?
Do you know each other? Yeah. And
yeah,
we never do
learn the woman's name, do we?
May.
They
do say it at the end. At the end.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they do say it. I forgot about that.
When she's
May,
in court.
May Roberts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and like, then it takes a while for them to convince him, to convince the priest to do it. And like, he really doesn't want to do it for a while. Then this girl shows up and tries to like fake marry them. And then he comes back and it's like, okay, like if you really want it, you know, I'll do it. That's okay. But then once he starts doing the ceremony, there's this little brief shot of him knocking Bill's hat off his head, which I really, really loved. Because it's just like, he isn't even afraid of him. He's like, you know what? Fuck you. Like, you will respect this. If you don't respect anything else, you will respect me and this whole thing for at least as long as I'm standing here and doing the sermon. Like, he knocks it off his head, and Bill doesn't even put it back on. So, like, that was one of the few moments where he's, like, humbled by somebody. And also, like, one of the moments I really liked the most in the movie, where it's, like, I think this comes later a bit, too, at the ending, and we can talk about that later, but that was one of the moments which I meant by saying that, like, Sternberg suddenly brings, like, these subtle, small moments into these huge scenes, which work that much more because they are so, you know, they're kind of invisible, or like he doesn't call a lot of attention to them. And I felt like that was like a really cool moment that maybe like even worked that well because the movie was so ridiculous for the most part.
Okay. I mean, that's a really good job discussing like how the moment works. But I am a little curious as to like what people make of the moment and like what von Sternberg might be trying to say. Is he just trying to say something as simple as marriage and religion are really serious, and that no matter what, you know, sort of what other state you might be in, that's a time for solemnity? Or what? I don't know. What do you guys think? Because I wasn't sure. To me, it seemed really clear that von Sternberg was trying to say this is the most important point in the film. We're going to calm down and, like, you know, call attention to this. But it wasn't clear to me what he was saying. Does anyone have any ideas?
I mean, I just wrote down that, like, that there's just this power of such a, you know, long-held institution, I guess, that I don't think that... it's hard to say. I feel like if the movie ended differently, it would have... a stronger impact. Like, when I thought that Bill was just gonna leave, like, and just sail away, and that was gonna be the end of the movie, I was like, oh, okay, so his whole persona is sort of being ironically critiqued that he's like this manly tough guy, but he's actually kind of just a huge douchebag. He doesn't ever get the license. He doesn't like do the things that he said he's going to do. He's just like, yeah, it's just a lark. Why not get married? And so I think that the strength of that scene would work a lot better if he didn't like jump off the boat at the end. And
or if he had showed up with the license, which is what I wanted him to do.
Yeah.
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 Go ahead, Patrick.
And I was going to say, there's a line that he says later after she shoots
the foreman.
Yeah, his boss or whatever. She says, like, thanks for protecting me or something like that. And he's like, you didn't need me to protect you, baby, or something like that. And I was like, is it trying to like reverse ground here? Like it sounds like it's going, it's like, oh, she doesn't really need him. Like maybe she's going to be all right on her own when he leaves her. And then it was like, he jumps off the boat and swims back to her and like, he saves her from going to prison. I was like, oh no, I wasn't saying that. It was saying that she really does need this man to protect her.
Just for the point of the marriage, there's one more character in the movie, which is the, I guess the ex-wife or Lou. The former wife of his boss. That Lou, right? When she tells May, like when she asks, like, do you think like marrying this guy is going to make you decent or whatever? And she's like, I don't know. And May like, I was decent before I got married. Or, like marriage wrecked me, and that kind of makes me, because Lou is one of the more sympathetic characters in the whole film. Like, that kind of makes me feel like von Sternberg isn't really going for the idea of, like, marriage being this thing, but maybe just the idea of, like, let's just really want it to be this thing that's kind of important, and that's why, like, it kind of works in that moment, but it doesn't really work out for all of the people in this movie. It doesn't really work out that way.
Mm.
But, like, there's still like a desire for it to work.
I thought there was a scene too that this is another shot that made me think there was going to be like some larger critique on marriage within it, where he starts putting money on her night table, like as he's about to leave, and I was like, this is kind of weird. He's treating her like a prostitute, and I was like, is he calling into question the institution of marriage here? And then it was like, it just completely undoes it later in the film. And I was just like, oh, I don't know why that was included. Maybe it's just like he's leaving money for her while he's going away. Maybe it's just trying to show that he's a good guy. But
I don't think so. I think it's the latter, because he's very nonchalant about the fact that he's leaving. And he's like, yeah, what did you want from me?
Yeah.
Nothing can keep me ashore.
I thought that scene was like really rough. Like when he's looking at the money and he gives her one bill, and then he looks a bit some more and is like, I'll give her another bill because I feel
$2.
Bad. It's like that actually makes him look like the biggest asshole ever.
Yeah, if the movie had just ended with him walking out, I think it would have, I don't know, like everything about the movie would have worked so much better and would feel like it, because I don't know, there's so many parts where he's acting so ridiculous, like this over the top cliche of manliness, like drinking beer straight out of a keg, just like pouring it into his mouth.
I said that maybe he was an early iteration of Donkey Kong. That's what we know on this.
He throws
the barrel at a person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the line that everyone was talking about earlier is his pickup line is that I've never seen a craft as trim as you.
As trim as you.
It's super gross.
Wow.
How does that even, like, yeah, okay. Go ahead.
I also wrote down that, if like he lived in modern times and like a crosswalk told him not to walk, he would just punch the crosswalk thing because he's so ridiculous.
I mean, there's a scene in the bar where he tells someone, are you just going to let me drink alone in peace, or do I have to take apart this whole thing? And I'm like, he really means it. He will break this whole building if people don't leave him alone. And I felt like
it was... He also looks...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I felt it was just like weird, like his physique and presence in this movie... Like, it's almost like Arnold Schwarzenegger made his way into, like, a 1920s movie. Because he's, like, so much bigger and stronger and more imposing than anyone around him. And, like,
I mean, Schwarzenegger's a lot like Charles
not even that tall,
Bronson.
But, like, yeah. Yeah. He's just...
He's a lot like who, Basil?
He looks like Charles Bronson. It was creeping me out the whole movie. I was like, he looks so much like Charles Bronson. It's pretty ridiculous.
I thought he looked like Lloyd Bridges a little bit. And I was like, is that Lloyd Bridges? Which would be a very different
movie. He is pretty old.
If Lloyd Bridges was the star. Since Lloyd Bridges is really sweet for the most part. Except for, I guess, in High Noon.
And Seinfeld.
Well, I haven't seen Seinfeld.
I mean, there could be like a more cynical explanation for why he decides to come back, and it's just because he kind of realizes that his job and the people he works with and works for are all basically garbage and terrible. And so for whatever it was worth, his wife was at least kind of nice to him.
Yeah.
So it's worth even going to prison rather than spending one more day doing that stoker thing. And
I thought that part was like ridiculous, where he's like I've never missed a ship, I've been a stoker my whole life, and then like it cuts to him and he's in the bottom of the ship, and I was like, why would anyone choose this? Like,
yes.
If you had anything to go home to, like, why would you be like, yeah, that's my life, that's what I need to stick with?
And I wanted to ask you, like, what did you think of his weird little friend who was like, who kept telling him that like all women could not be trusted and like he knew what was better for him and blah, blah, blah. Like, was he like in love with him? He was totally in love with him.
Maybe.
He might have been.
I thought it was just, you know, like some weird idea of what sailing culture is like. They're like, I'm married to the sea.
Yeah.
We don't messing around with women for a night's fine, but you can't settle down with them. They'll ruin your life.
Yeah, but that guy wanted to get married to Bill. Like, he was so into him. He kept, like, pulling
his
him
nickname was Sugar.
Away. It was, oh God. Then it probably was, like, some kind of weird homophobic character. Like, he's just, it's the gay guy. The gay guy on the ship. Not really unheard of.
It's not on topic to what you guys are talking about, but one of my notes, which also deals with what Patrick was doing, talking about the plot earlier, is that it was really hard to tell who was who, because they start off and they're all covered in grime, and then the next shot they're like clean, and I'm like, no, you have to like show them getting cleaned off, otherwise I don't know who is who. It's like, I recognize them with grime and I recognize them clean, but I don't recognize the connecting pieces.
It also doesn't help that they were all wearing the same hats. Like, at least give them different hats or something.
At least his friend had a pipe, you know.
I mean, I guess to a certain extent, Bill's boss and Lou are supposed to be like maybe like mirrors of him and May in a way. Like, what would happen to them?
Yeah.
Like, if they were older,
well, they're
and
a
more
counterpoint.
Cynical. Yeah, counterpoint
for sure.
In a way, exactly. So like that's probably also in a way, I think in a way it's maybe even intentional that there are these similarities, and like from the way they look, and like that you kind of mistake Bill and his boss a little bit, like, and that May and Lou look like also pretty similar. Like Lou looks like just like an older, like slightly more miserable version of May.
Sorry.
Yeah, what I was thinking was that he was showing what would happen if Bill did go back out to sea. And, you know, it was like, here's what's going to happen to you if you go back out to sea. Like, you should stay with this woman and rescue her from the world.
Yeah, it might not have been
that you created
intentional at all. But, like, Ilya, I felt like Lou was maybe the most sympathetic character in the film. So it's weird, the idea that they're supposed to, like, provide a negative example for Bill and May, because I think Lou's cool. And I, like,
yeah.
It felt, again, one of the things that I do think is, like, consistently something that Von Sternberg stands for is that he is kind of pro-sex, which is... and so, like, when, like, Lou is like, you were gone for years or whatever, what did you expect me to do? Like, it doesn't feel like we're supposed to be judging you for that. We're supposed to be like, right on, girl power, lady.
I agree, especially considering that her husband is, like, one of the most negative characters in the whole film.
Yeah.
Like, he's a really creepy guy who tries to rape May. Yeah, so... Or, like, he doesn't actually try to rape her, but he comes on really, really strong. And, like,
I
it's
think
kind of
implied,
implied that's what she's...
That end,
that's why
end,
Luke
yeah.
kind of shoots him. Yeah. Right.
Sort of switching gears, I thought it was really interesting and unexpected in a movie that she doesn't seem grateful at all at first that he saved her. And I was like, that's pretty cool, because... She just seems like when he's talking to her, she's just like, nah. She very similarly to Marlena Dietrich, like, she seemed like she could not be less interested in the conversation they were having for the first, like, 5 minutes of the movie, and I really liked that.
Yeah. I like that too, but then at the end of the scene, it had maybe my least favorite moment in the whole thing, where, like, he says, all you need is a good time, and she says... I've had too many good times. And he said, well, you've never had a night with Bill Roberts, basically implying that he's going to fuck the suicide out of her. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, this is disgusting.
Yeah, I think, again, if it had ended with him leaving, it would have all made sense, because he is pretty much like this self-absorbed douchebag who can't stop saying his own full name all the time. Like... Like, he's really proud not just to be Bill, but to be Bill Roberts.
I do think it's funny that in Raising Arizona, when M. Emmett Walsh is telling Nicolas Cage that story at the beginning at the hole in the metal drilling plant, he goes, now, me and Bill was walking down. He's like, is that Bill Roberts? He goes, Bill Roberts, not that mother scratcher.
I wouldn't like put it beyond the codes to be referencing this.
I do too. I really hope that's what they're referencing.
That mother scratcher.
It wouldn't surprise me. There's that weird reference to Ruggles of Red Gap in Barton Fink, which is another kind of weirdly obscure early film. It's from 35, but still, yeah. I'm sure that they've seen Docks of New York.
I've actually
also
seen
this
Ruckus
guy's totally a mother scratcher, like 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Along more lines of beautiful shots, I thought.
Oh yeah.
For all its obviousness, the scene when she's threading the needle and starts crying and the frame becomes like all blurry and she can't thread the needle anymore was pretty cool. I was like, yeah, that was pretty nice.
Also, the shot when she's reflected in the water before she jumps in, I was like, oh, I wonder if Jean Vigo really loves this movie, because it reminded me a lot of La Llorente.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that too. I like the when she jumps in, it does the music does that little it has like the ripples and like the music sounds like ripples in the water. That's really good.
I have done a bunch of shots that I liked. I think it was maybe the first shot of the film where it's just the anchor dropping into the water, like it's a close up of the anchor and then it drops.
Yeah, that's the second shot. The first one's the tracking shot of New York when the boat's pulling in.
Yeah.
But I like that shot a lot too.
Everything that involved fog and like lights behind fog or smoke or lights through smoke was like amazing.
Uh-huh.
I thought the seagull work in this movie was exceptional as well.
I wrote down birds, because there was a part where there was a musical sting and the birds were all, like, flapping around. I think it was when he was getting shot. And it was like,
yeah.
And the birds were like, moving around. It was like, birds for emphasis.
Seagull acting in the background was fantastic.
The smoking, what really killed me was the smoking in the stoke room.
Yeah.
So, like, they just finished, like, or they were taking a break from, like, pushing this thing into these furnaces. They're
yeah.
covered in this, in just this black tar or whatever.
Coal dust.
And, like, yeah, the coal, and, like, the first thing they do is just, like, light off a cigarette. Like,
when
yes,
they're extremely
that's exactly,
flammable.
That's exactly what is totally needed at that point. It's like, oh, I need some... Ooh, I need a smoke. Like, there's
yeah.
not enough
it's
smoke
not quite
in this
hot
room.
Enough in here. I need the heat in my lungs.
Like, and, that really, that made me laugh out loud when I saw that.
And that's the first thing she does when she wakes up from almost drowning, too. It's like, oh,
yep.
you're sick. Here's a cigarette.
And I love
so cure what ails you,
match
kid.
On the wall. The way she rubs, like, lights the match on the wall was really cool.
Yeah, I did think that was cool. That was a really cool part of her character.
People used
the
to
smoking
smoke
thing
in
reminded
really cool
me.
Ways.
Basil?
There's a part in The Thin Man where as soon as they wake up, they just start making drinks. Like, and they don't necessarily like mention it. They're talking about the case or whatever, but as soon as he wakes up, William Powell just starts pouring himself a drink. At, like, they get woken up in the middle of the night, so it's like 3:30 or 4 in the morning, and he's just like making a drink while trying to solve the case, and it's like, this is the first thing I do every day.
It's like not exactly the same, but there's that scene in Laura where the detective goes to her apartment and he's like, he hasn't been invited, he's just walking around her apartment and then like smells her liquor and then pours himself a drink and then passes out on her chair in the middle of the day.
Super unprofessional detective work.
Well, you wanted to get a real sense of what it was like to be trapped
yeah,
in
exactly.
apartment.
Get intimate with those surroundings.
I guess that was acceptable back in the day. I don't know.
Yeah. You would expect someone
earlier.
To be passed out on your couch when you came back to your apartment smelling of booze.
It's just what the 30s and 40s were like.
I was going to say, Ruben, when you were talking about the end of that scene and not liking it, I thought you were going to mention the part which also really grossed me out, which was when she's super impressed with his muscles. Like, she accidentally brushes up against his arm and then just, like, can't stop touching it and staring at his tattoos.
Is that in that scene? I think that's a later.
That's a different scene. That's in the bar.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
when he shows her, like, all his tattoos. And
I
stuff.
Did write that down. It didn't bother me.
But
as much
I agree.
As you.
That went on for so long when she just rubs his arm over and over.
Suggestively suggestive arm rub, where it was basically a hand job.
Yes. Like, that was, I guess, as close as they came to, like, sex before marriage.
That same scene has the craft as trim as you line too.
Yeah.
<Good stuff.
laughs> Yes, that scene has all the good stuff in it.
And not
is
long
also...
after Lou, when she's talking to him, Book Harry says, tells him to not queer our fun. That was another good line from this movie.
Mm.
Talking to the preacher.
Yeah. I like how when Bill says that he doesn't like to brag about his affairs, that's when he's showing her his arm with all the tattoos of all the girls he's been with. So, like, how does that not bragging about... What are you talking about? Are you being humble right now by showing someone, like, engravings of all the people you've slept with?
Yeah. Although I still like that the way she responds when she's like, yeah, I don't brag either. But then, I don't know, there's something about it that seems sort of subversive in that she's like, I don't have any tattoos, though. Like,
yeah.
The subtext of that scene.
Yeah.
Except I do brag about it all over my arms.
I I don't have that many more notes. I have, I learned a new phrase from this. It's not like we can use it because the slang is too dated, but gave me the air. I had never heard that before. And I looked,
pretty good.
I looked it up.
He gave me the air once too often.
It's basically like rejected me, didn't want to talk to me. And then I also wrote that he's not a very strong swimmer. The actor who plays the
Yeah,
Bill
he kind of swims with one arm.
He does, yeah, he does what I do, which is what people who are not good swimmers do, which is, like, keep your head above water and, like, swim on your side and just do side stroke for the most part. It's, those people are not good swimmers. I recognize it because it's what I do. I am not a strong swimmer either.
Talking about him generally, I thought, like, the shape of his body is super interesting to me. He has, like, really long legs. I feel like that kind of casting is not as prevalent anymore. Like, he's really tall, but, like, most of it is legs, sort of like Edward G. Robinson. Except
yeah.
Edward G. is not tall, but still long legs.
Yeah, but and it also makes it very believable when he shoves people away, because he's
yeah.
just like his legs are where most of those people's like necks start, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like you really buy it that they would.
Yeah, there's that one crazy shot where the cops are about to arrest her for murder or whatever, and he just climbs up the side of the building really nonchalantly.
Yeah.
I was like. I was like, I bought that. He really does seem like he could just climb the side of a building, no problem.
Another way in which he's a predecessor to Donkey Kong.
If only he'd punched out the window.
If only he'd, like, grabbed her and, like, climbed to the top of the building and just threw more barrels at people.
And then, like, he had jumped on the building and, like, the little, like, stairs on the side of the building had fallen down to, like, an angle.
Yep.
And then a racist caricature of an Italian plumber came in from the other side.
Yeah. Maybe you borrowed Marlene Dietrich's racist suit from Blonde Venus when he got out of jail.
You know, I guess, was von Sternberg responsible for inspiring Donkey Kong? Because
I think this is the most radical.
We'll have to watch more
of
his movies and look for more Donkey Kong clues. maybe Shigeru Miyamoto was just a big fan of Joseph von Sternberg. Who knows?
They're both racist and sexist, so they have that in common.
True that.
The other note that I have that I didn't mention was that I mean, this is true of, like, most of von Sternberg's films, but everything has, like, this cool askew look a lot of the times. So, like, you'll be looking at the foreground and everything is centered, and then you'll see, like, a window in the background that is not straight. And you're like, is that window not straight? Or are they on an unstraight floor and we're straight on them or whatever? I don't know. I like it. It works here really well because he does it subtly. And The Blue Angel, I did not like it because it reminded me too much of German Expressionism, and, like, everything was crooked, going, like, different windy, weird ways. And I was, like, watching Tim Burton films.
Sweet, sweet cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only other thing I was planning on saying was just that it feels like this movie could have ended so many different times. Like, he could have just swum ashore and then they're reunited, but then there's this weird court scene and then he has to, like, save her from that. I was like, you could just cut this whole scene. They don't need to get caught for stolen clothes because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, is it ever explained that he stole those before then?
Yeah, he does. He kicks the door in at the pawn shop and steals the clothes.
Because he's in a hurry.
He's
to have a good time.
It's also such a weird thing that they would arrest her for that. Like, the police would be on the lookout for someone who stole clothes from a pawn shop.
Yeah, it was reported that morning and she was already arrested.
Like, they were on the case really quickly.
Maybe the pawn owner like saw her walking around and he's like, "Dang, that's my stolen dress."
I recognize that dress anywhere.
Yeah, there's no other versions of that dress anywhere.
They didn't make any more of those. That's the only one.
I didn't have this in a note, but I just remembered that I like the fact that like she dries up when they go on their date and puts on the new clothes, but he just wears his wet clothes for like most of the rest of the night.
That's right.
And he's just walking around completely wet after having saved her from the river or whatever.
But his clothes dry.
Yeah, he wrings out his hat way later.
You know, because that's how manly he is.
I mean, every time he gets out of the water, his clothes dry up like almost instantaneously. Like when he got after the ending, when he gets back out of the water, by the time he's in the courtroom, he's already like almost dry again.
Yeah, like, but the other time when he saved her, he's wet like the rest of the night.
Right. Well, yeah, because he also pours like whiskey over himself.
Oh, yeah,
and
he pours
other
beer
stuff.
On himself
like,
again.
He like
he wants
he really...
to stay wet.
Yes, I mean, that's like a fun joke on his being an alcoholic, staying wet all the time.
One thing about the ending, though, I agree with you, it seemed really weird, but that shot that he ends with was really nice. So if he hadn't included that extraneous ending, then we wouldn't have gotten that nice pullback shot of the whole courtroom.
That was a very nice shot.
Yeah. Now she stood like kind of like on the side, like not even in any kind of like focus or whatever. Like she just stands like lost in this courtroom, which I also like because it kind of emphasizes like the romantic aspect of that ending, that like him sacrificing himself for her again or like saving her is like he still makes her like wait 60 days while he's in prison, and then like, you know, like again she doesn't really ask to be saved and he still does.
Maybe
it
I'd wait forever for you.
And it's like, yeah, sure, I guess I'd wait forever. Because, like, I'm out of options at this point. I don't know.
Although they're still not legally married since he never got that license.
That's right. So, my question is that was that really her name? I guess that was just the name that she gave them.
Yeah. She certainly couldn't have had an ID with it.
Yeah, I don't know when they started having, like, everybody has to have an ID. I don't know when that was established.
Probably not by 1928.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, people needed passports to go from country to country.
Yeah, but I get the impression that they were pretty lax on that.
I could buy it.
Especially,
if nothing else, it wouldn't be like a photo ID. It would just be a piece of paper that would be very easily transferable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, by World War II, documents were pretty, like, normal to have for most people, because, like, most movies about Nazis have them go coming up to people in cars and asking for their papiere all the time, which means papers. So, yeah, I guess by then it was, you had to have those papers. That was expected.
What I was even going to say is I didn't get why he even goes back to the ship. Because I thought it was just going to have that, like, weird, cutesy, ripped pocket. Be like, well, I guess I'm staying. Can't go without a board with a ripped shirt. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a ridiculous kind of romantic comedy place to end this movie. And then it kept going, and I was like, oh, I guess we're not stopping here.
Yeah. I mean, that ripped pocket scene was a little... You know, like, I kind of liked it, even though I also, like, a lot of it was really on the nose. But I like that it, like, kind of, it gave those two characters kind of a more meaningful closure, in a way. Like, she can't thread the needle because she's crying, even though she wants to help him. And then he, like, he threads the needle, but then he gives it back to her. And it's not, like, meant, that's, like, a moment where he doesn't even come off, at least I didn't read it that way, even though he's such an obvious macho in all the other scenes. In that moment, it didn't seem like, yeah, you know, fix my clothes, woman. But, like, it was more like, yeah, you know, here, I'll help you. You can do it now. you know, like it was meant in a more like a tender way. That was like another moment that I felt like was kind of unexpectedly like affecting, even though the scene was obviously like over the top and really like melodramatic.
Sure. Yeah, I think with a few changes, this could be a really affecting melodrama. Like, I like the setup and I like the idea, and I just don't, you know, the social content and the gender politics are really off. But I think you could I'm kind of curious to see what the 1948 version is like now, if it's the same story or if they've changed it.
I'm not sure.
I haven't even looked at the information.
Let's get to the Googling
portion or anything.
I mean, if I could flesh this story out, I would have just given Lou more to do and like given her character more of a background, maybe, and just generally had like more of a story, and then that would have already like made it probably really good.
Yeah, it looks like it's just the same in name only. According to Wikipedia, it is a 1945 film starring the East Side Kids, the 20th film of the 22 pictures made in the film series of the East Side Kids.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's the same.
Inside Kids.
Roaming around the docks.
Oh, it sounds like they're sort of like the Hardy Boys or whatever. They're like a group of kids who solve murders and whatnot.
I don't think they have a good piece of line for this.
None of them are actually kids, though. It's like they're all grown men. from the poster, anyway.
Yeah, they do look pretty old to be called kids.
They just stuck with the name.
Committed. Someone called the East Side Kids. Hey, East Side Kids. What? East Side Kids. The Beast Ride Mids?
What did they call us?
Grandpa, Grandpa. It's for you.
So you don't have anything else to say about the Ducks of New York?
Wow. That's a whole bunch of movies in a very short period of time. 22 movies from 1940 to 1945. They're busy kids.
Wow. They had to solve a lot of mysteries.
Over 4 a year. It's pretty good casework.
Just like Wishbone the dog.
Oh, Wishbone.
Does anyone else have anything to say about this movie?
I think I'm good.
Yeah, I think
it really docked that New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we really rocked this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, Mr. Von Sternberg bringing out the best.
You can't see it at home.
Cocked and loaded.
You can't see it at home, but Ruben is laughing maniacally at that joke he just made.
Mm-hmm.
He's just cackling.
Yes.
And now I'm showing off how bald my head is.
Somewhat bald.
Now I look like the demon girl from The Ring.
Yep. Patrick's gone.
Or Cousin It.
No, I'm gone.
I prefer Cousin
It. Okay. Well, I don't know if anyone is talking right now since I'm frozen.
Just put some glasses on.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Oh,
and
you're everywhere.
If you enjoyed this podcast, go on iTunes and give us
five stars.
Are
you trying to win a contest? Is that why your hair is so long?
Give us a nice rating and we'll see you next time.
Like, who on the crew can go the longest without cutting their hair?
No, I am too lazy to find a barbershop in LA to cut it. I don't know where the barbershops are around here, so I just haven't bothered.
That's totally fair. I get my hair cut once every like 4 or 5 months. I get it cut real short, and then it grows out to about where it's at because I'm real lazy.
I also don't know how to tell people to cut it. Like, I don't know what the, like, how should they cut it? I don't know. I don't ever know. Like, they always ask me, like, what style do you want? And I'm like, I don't know. Just the good one?
Just say, give me the Patrick Bateman.
Good one?
Yes.
I don't know what styles are.
Give me the 80s insert
businessman
style. Insert sociopathic character.
Ruben is frozen.
Yes, Ruben is frozen in a very weird position.
In a very funny pose with his like hands on his head.
Yep. I guess we should end the podcast since he's already gone.
All right.
Is he gone?
I don't hear him talking anymore. I think he's
frozen
for real. For realsies this time.
Will we have to end the podcast? Who's going to end the podcast if it's not Ruben?
I mean,
should we just like...
Well, I can say all the stuff he usually says. All right.
Cut to dark.
Thank you for listening to the Loose Cannons podcast. If you like our podcast, go on iTunes and rate us. Give us 5 stars. And if you don't like us, keep it to yourself.
Also go to loosecannons.net and check out our writing.
Yeah, check out our writings on different films. Maybe Basil will post something about
writing, mostly Basil's writing.
Yeah. About
which is really good.
Or maybe I'll post something. Maybe Ruben will post something about the films they saw.
It's
and
true.
Loved or hated. And
Ruben did say he wanted to write something about Gone Girl, so maybe he'll post that.
I'm looking forward to seeing that and Basil's thing on Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
And,
there's Ruben.
So.
Patrick just also recorded a thing.
I recorded it also. I was just like, oh, Ruben's not here, so I'll do his little sign off. All right, so we have 2 sign-offs, dueling sign-offs. Yes.
That can be our outtake this time.
Sure.
Yes, play it at the same time.
Perfect. Perfect.
Alright.
Alright, well.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. I would totally be down for a drunk podcast one time. Especially
that could be part of the just one of us, and we don't say which one. It's a surprise.
It's like a surprise
for the
that
listener.
Becomes obvious after like 10 seconds of listening. I mean, unless that person pretends to not be drunk.
Sledgehammer.
It's usually hard to pretend that you're not drunk when you are drunk, though.
Well, that's usually one of the best.
I feel like that's what most drunk people do.
Yes.
In general.
They try and pretend they're not drunk.
Not me.
Yeah.
I want to tell
you
something.
Just embrace
I'm
it.
Tell you. I'm gonna.
No,
I'm
I don't embrace it.
Something.
I just say I'm drunk over and over again.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, most drunk people say they're not drunk all the time. That's how you know that they're really drunk.
I'm not drunk. You are the one who is drunk.
I haven't had any drinks.
How could I be drunk?
How could I be drinks?
I think that's real annoying, and I can never stop myself from doing it. I'll walk up to people and I'll be like, I'm drunk.
I think that's really funny.
And then you try to light my hair on fire.
Uh-huh, I did that
good
too.
Good times. Good times. I had no idea what was happening, too.
Luckily, someone was nice enough to put a picture up on Facebook.
Yeah. I didn't
They're
know
like,
until I saw
Ruben's
the pictures.
Ruben's holding a lighter near Patrick's head. What should I do? A, move his hand away. B, take a picture. And that was the day Patrick and I almost stopped being friends.
And I didn't even
because
know
you actually lit his hair on fire.
If I had lit his hair on fire, I'm assuming we wouldn't be friends anymore.
Maybe.
It's pretty hard to bounce back.
I would probably forgive that.
I don't know. I don't have a lot of friends, so maybe.
At least you'll have a story together.